Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just across the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how you doing?
Good. A couple of guys impersonating radio professionals. We've got a great show tonight. In studio, Dr. Les Green is with us, and what a story.
Great story.
We will bring him on, time permitting, because you know how we get.
I think he's coming on early tonight, is what I think. I know how we get.
They always say leave them wanting more, and if we don't get Les on sooner than later, we need to get off the air here in about 2 minutes.
I think we always
That's
leave
the only
them,
way we could leave them wanting more.
We always want them, you know, leave them that way. It's good to be back in the studio. We had a week off last week due to Easter, and it's always fun, Bill, and I never want to, you know, forget what a privilege it is to do this show.
It
really is.
It is. People look forward to the show, and they look forward to stories of transformation, and tonight is going to knock it out of the park, so to speak.
We got a lot.
I'm in the baseball mode
to talk
right
about.
Now.
Yep.
I'm in the baseball mode.
Yep.
Yes, I am. Because the hockey,
ended yesterday.
Hockey ended for us in a sad sort of way yesterday. But anyway, let's talk about step three tonight, George. I think that's going to be the appropriate step to talk in light of what we're going to be discussing coming up with Les.
Yeah, and we talked about step three and step 12. So step three is we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. We understand him to be Jesus Christ. And step 12 is we, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, as the result, not a result, the result, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics who still suffered and practice these principles in all our affairs. Let's break that down a little bit for our Christian walk. Once we have been saved, once we are doing our work, we can't help but want to share this. And tonight's story is going to be about somebody who God touched that transformed him completely, and the rest of his life was sharing what a living God did to a dead person to make him alive and pass along in the lives of others. And for me, in recovery, the greatest thing about that, and if you're new to recovery or you've been doing it a while, don't pass up the best part of this, because we get to take what God has given us and share with other people. And, Bill, I know you love doing that. I do, too.
I do.
It's magic. And the miracles aren't dead. It's not a fairy tale. Jesus actually was resurrected. And the living God can take dead people and make them alive and transform them. And that's why we do this show. And we get to hear these stories. They're great.
You know, George, God will always use you in spite of your past. And he only uses flawed people, which is a good thing, because that's the only thing he's got to work with.
Kind of all he's got to work with,
all
right?
All he's got to work with. You know, the weak, the sinful, his mercy pours out of heaven and gives us a chance to go make a difference in the lives of others. By the power he gives us. So that's an awesome privilege, like you just said.
It is. And let's be grateful. We have tough days sometimes. Not every day is Disneyland. But let's look at where we were maybe a year ago and where we are today. And let's be grateful for every day. One of the things that I've gotten from working with you, Bill, is you talk about godly appointments, that there are no accidents, no coincidences, and that everybody you meet, there's a reason you meet them. And I know you go and spend time sitting at Starbucks sometimes just waiting for people to come into your area that you minister to, and you make friendships that way, and you disciple people. I want to be on the alert to that, because lately for me in my life, that has happened a lot. And I think what we're going to hear tonight, we were talking before the show, we shared the doctor and I do share somebody in common who taught us both to swim. And that guy had a huge impact on my life.
That's pretty cool.
It is
cool.
You guys
have a friend in common. It's amazing.
Well, I think I'm sure he's passed away, but I know it was a long time ago. I think that's pretty safe to say, but we'll see him again.
Yeah, yeah. And, George, you have said before many times that the Department of Corrections may be one of the best evangelical tools out there, because once you are there behind bars and the door slams, God's got your attention.
Yeah, that can be a moment of mental clarity where the Holy Spirit can strike in and give you a new thought of, hey, things aren't going too well. You're not really flying first class. You're not really on a winning streak. And even when we go speak in jails, Bill, when I hear the door clang, I'm always glad when I can leave. I never want to go back and do another day. I didn't do that much time. I was just in jail, but I'll tell you what, it gets your attention. And unfortunately for some people, it's not a deterrent. And I remember talking to a judge one time and he said, if doing time isn't a deterrent, I don't know what is. And I got to align with that. But we've met a lot of people who work for the Department of Corrections and they have a great ministry going.
Mm-hmm. And we know so many people through the work we do, George, of people who, men who have come out of prison, men who are facing more prison time. And it's interesting how their attitudes change about it because they have lost some of their rebellious spirit when they're facing incarceration. And they're starting to look for answers that are different from the way they've done it in the past.
Yeah, and then there's guys that say, I can do the time. And I
that's true
never
too.
Have gotten that, and that's really sad to me. But this will be a great show about this because we're going to hear a lot about it from a man who's done it and succeeded and is helping others. And I always think, Bill, that's the big deal. God does not help us with our addiction without having a job for us to do. And I think one of the greatest things, if you're out there struggling with your addiction and you're really down, and I've been there, and a lot of us have, and you think it's over, it is not over. God has a plan for you, and the great thing is the creator of the universe who sent his son Jesus to transform us and redeem us and forgive us wants you to work for him. And I can't think, Bill, of a greater honor than doing that, and we get to do that through all our failures. In church today, Christ died for us while we were still sinners. There's a lot of love coming from God for us. You just have to accept it and act on it.
George, you know, I have to say, our guest, Les Green tonight, who's in studio, you and he have something in common. You were both
cool guys.
Well, I wasn't going to go there.
Okay.
It was funny. You kind of jumped in.
Because I think you'd be real jealous, you know.
Well, no, I wished you wouldn't have jumped in. What I was going to say was you were both kicked out of high school in 11th grade.
Well, mine was 10th.
You did?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of a victory.
So I got kicked out before you did, buddy.
So that's
yeah.
kind of a victory for you, isn't it?
I think it's, yeah, I'll take it.
I mean, you're kind of playing the one-upsman thing right now.
Yeah, but I shouldn't. He's a big guy.
6'7". 6'7", tall, lanky. He was extremely pigeon-toed with no self-esteem. Now, you're a guy that size. I would think you'd have self-esteem.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you, 5'10"? You got no self-esteem.
No, I was 6. Now we're going the other way. No, yeah, I got self-esteem. It's delusional thinking.
Right.
It's going to be an interesting story because I know how it ended up, but I don't know the story. So
right.
This is going to be really nice.
Right. And then when he was 14, he'd go to dances in high school. But he'd stand outside and drink a half a pint of liquor before entering. And, of course, he would have a great time and then throw up. So that's how it all started, age 14. We hear that over and over.
So you've never had a drink.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet you've never danced. Is that right? That's true.
I don't do any dancing that involves my body moving.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you would dance if you didn't have a couple cocktails first. I never could.
Really?
Well, I couldn't then, but I thought I could, so.
Uh-huh. But we've heard this over and over before where there's experimentation,
yep.
And I've known Les for a while, and I know Les's family, and I know that he's got two of the most solid parents ever. His dad's no longer with us, but mom is 94, still amazing, and growing up in that family was amazing. So everybody has their rebellious phase where they go off and they experiment, and they're trying to cover up their personal insecurities, of which we deal with a lot in our lives.
Yes. And around that age, it's gotten younger recently, but we're from the same generation. And 14, 15 is when you went out and you're trying to be cool, and all of a sudden you like the feeling. And once you like the feeling, where's this been my whole life? And once you get that feeling, you want more and more and more. And the path to addiction has started, and it's going to continue unless something stops it.
Mm-hmm. And then by age 15, the drugs continued. At 16, Les was arrested for burglary of a gas station and placed on juvenile probation. So he was in trouble with the law shortly thereafter. And we've heard that again many, many times. A little bit of experimentation, a little something to change the way you feel. The next thing you know, you're in trouble with the law.
Well, I think it becomes your identity, too. We work with a lot of guys that are in gangs, and they can stop doing the drug, but they like the lifestyle. They like the gangsta lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough, and that can be addicting. And it's probably his identity. He's probably dropping out of athletics for some one reason or another, and then he starts using, and now this is his identity. He's the bad guy, and some of his friends are bad guys. We find community. It might be good. It might be bad, but you're going to find it.
But there's a certain coolness to the bad identity. Isn't that the connection you're making?
Absolutely.
I mean, you think you're cool. Clearly you're not. But, I mean...
Delusional thinking once again.
There you go.
Again,
We're back to your delusional thinking.
Yeah, it's a very comfortable place for me to live.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've dealt with it, haven't you?
No, I haven't dealt with any of my stuff, but... Don't tell anybody that. Yeah, I think that's the deal. You know, you get deluded, you get away from God. There's a way that seems right to man that ends in death. That's exactly what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Good scripture, George.
It is good.
Yeah.
And then so Les was, I mean, I'm going to let him tell his whole story, but he's ended up going to prison three times over 5.5 years. And now what he has done over the course of his life and what advantages and opportunities he took and the way God touched his life is just absolutely remarkable. So I think now is the time to take a very short break, and then when we come back, we'll just bring him on the show.
Great.
That sound like a good idea, George?
Sounds great.
Just keep nodding. Just nod yes. There we go. Excellent. All right. Thanks for listening to Real Recovery. So glad you're listening. Be back in just a minute. Oh, welcome back. The band is here. The entire band for tonight is here. That's my British accent, by the way, which is kind of not very good. I don't see you trying stuff. You never take risks on the air.
No, I don't have to. It wasn't bad.
What was it? My accent?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. All right. Our in-studio guest tonight, Dr. Les Green, and I met Les years and years ago, and I have to say, this is one of those stories that, George, it's hard to put your arms around because you're kicked out of school in 11th grade and you end up being a PhD.
I love that.
I do too. Les, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start with the basics. You've got your bride here.
Yes.
And your grandson.
Sally's here.
Sally?
Wife,
yeah.
Of 47 years.
Your wife of 47 years.
Grandson, Isaiah, he's a ninth grader, but he looks a lot like he might be in 40 years old.
Like he's very poised.
Yes,
he's got a lot of composure.
Right.
When he said he was in ninth grade, George and I could hardly believe it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, of course, feel free to say hi to your mother.
Hi, Mom.
There we go.
Are you out there?
Yeah. Oh, she's listening.
Oh, okay.
And
you're sure.
And your family, say hi to them real quick.
Oh,
hey, family.
And Lauren and family. And
there we go.
Everybody.
Awesome. Okay.
Hello, I'm on the radio.
Yeah. So, Les, I have to say that your story is one that we've heard before in terms of how it got started. You know, a kid with maybe a little bit of self-esteem issues who wants to change the way he feels. And you're 14 in high school. Let's have a little fun. Let's get a little bit something to make me feel more confident, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It was, and I think you mentioned before about the alcohol. You know, you go to dances, and the only way I figured out that nobody would be watching is if I couldn't see. So I'd get drunk and go in, and I'd dance like a maniac for a while, and then I'd throw up, and you know. But it felt good. It felt like I could fit in,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I needed.
And you're. The parents that are paying attention. So how did you get home at night with obviously alcohol on your breath or the appearance of a kid that had been drinking?
You know, I actually don't remember.
Okay.
To tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure that I did come home at night all the time.
Okay.
You know, I was 14 though, so I must have.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago.
It kind of is, isn't it?
That's 50 years ago.
Okay. All right. So, but you had, a fair amount of opportunities in high school at 14 and plenty of friends that were willing to participate as well.
Yeah. I think one of my most difficult things in high school is I was, I think a late mature person.
Okay.
And I was not involved in sports because I got hit by a car, when I was in eighth grade, going into eighth grade. So I couldn't play football, which is the sport I really thought I was good at.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe would have been, but,
how did you get hit by a car?
I was standing on the corner, minding my own business with my back to the street, and a young woman who was drunk was trying to make a right turn and missed it and came right across and hit me and another guy.
Wow.
It tore my leg up, so that's all.
Wow. Wow.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have dreams of being an athlete and all of a sudden that's gone?
Actually, the only dream I really had, I wanted to play 8th grade Laidlaw football. Those guys were so big and they actually had real uniforms.
Okay.
And that was my dream. Okay. Because I figured, and I was a defensive end and I was very good.
Plus you were very tall.
Yeah.
Were you over 6 in 8th grade? How tall were you?
I don't know. I tall whatever everybody.
Okay.
Was. So yeah. I was pretty tall.
Yeah.
But not athletic at all.
Okay.
Except football. I could not play basketball. I didn't play basketball. I actually just played football and then I played nothing after that. After I got hit by the car. Except in prison I did.
Okay.
I was a great football player in prison.
All right.
And basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
I thought anyway. I still wasn't a very good basketball player.
But you started boxing as well.
Yep. Yep. I was a good boxer. I went to the Golden Gloves tourney up in Hibbing and I hope Ray Tomberlin is listening because that's the guy knocked out for the championship in Hibbing in 66 to go to the Upper Midwest Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
He's a teacher up there.
Okay. If you hit him, he's probably confused by the concept of mixed vegetables right now.
No.
Mixed vegetables.
Right.
Yeah. So then at 14 and when the drinking and drugs started taking place in your life, it didn't take long before you found yourself getting in some trouble with the law.
Yep, juvenile authorities at 16, 17,
okay.
Wound up at Glen Lake, which most people know, in the juvenile center in downtown Minneapolis, and then eventually involved in stealing an outboard motor off a boat, and it was a felony crime, and went to the reformatory.
Is that in St. Cloud?
Yep.
All right.
That was the first time.
And how old were you then?
18,
okay.
Just turned 18.
That'd be a scary little wake-up call.
Yeah, it was. It
but
was.
You were defiant back then?
Well, I wasn't defiant. It's just sort of I was stumbling around trying to figure out what life was about. And so it wasn't like I was – and I wasn't really defiant so much as I just didn't know which end was up.
Hmm.
And I remember I was only in about a year that time. I got out and went right back to drugs because it was, again, that whole issue of wanting to feel good around people.
Mm-hmm.
And so – and then – went back to prison and 7 months later.
Was it a parole violation or just another offense?
Parole violation that time.
And, what was the violation?
I think use of drugs.
What kind of drugs were you doing?
Heroin.
Just right away out of prison the first time? Or?
Oh, well, no, actually, we were drinking cough syrup initially, and that was before I went to prison. And then when I came out, it was the heroin. It was a very interesting drug that it made me feel good,
mm-hmm.
And it was it just simply captured my life, and it was I liked it.
Les, was that shooting into your veins?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that seems like to be the scariest thing in the world to do.
Well, you know, it does seem a bit like that, but the first time you do it, it's like, oh wow.
Okay.
This takes no fear. It took everything away, all the fear and all the self-esteem issues. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons I think people keep doing it. You don't get hooked right away, but you're hooked on that feeling. I think they wrote a song about that, but something like that. But that continued the process.
Mm-hmm. So now you've violated parole. You're back in prison. And how long is the next stint there?
About 18 months, and I finished high school.
In prison.
Which was an interesting thing. I finished high school in 1965.
Okay.
And it was an interesting thing about high school is that I went to high school because there was nothing else to do. I didn't want to make license plates, so I went to high school.
Mm-hmm.
Got out and went back again for a third time, and this time was a tough one. It was I felt this was it. You know, I'd actually gotten arrested for a burglary and they were going to drop that, but I had a federal drug offense. I got arrested by the federal government for possession of heroin, and this was the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had three felonies. One was for possession of narcotics, and it's a federal offense.
Mm-hmm.
So back in prison again, and this time I'm angry at everybody. I'm just angry and saying this is everybody else's fault. And I remember my parole agent came to see me. And he said to me, you know, nobody can do anything for you. You're going to have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It was real interesting because the concept for me was was like, oh, I can do that. Because if you, you know, you don't grab both feet at the same time and try to levitate.
Mm-hmm.
You pull one foot up, put it on a stool, you get your balance, and then you lean forward and you put the other one up. And you use it like steps. And that's what it perceived to be in my mind, like steps.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you make each of those steps, you say, well, I can pull myself up. You just have to keep doing it. But the real kick was with my aunt Retha Maxwell, who was actually my great aunt, used to send books to me like Prayer Power and Prayer Could Change Your Life and that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not into that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to read the first chapter and the last chapter of each of the books so I could comment on the book and letter to be polite to my great aunt. And she sent me The Power of Positive Thinking by Dr. Norman Vincent Peale.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember reading through the first chapter, and I kept going. I got to the fourth chapter of the book, and this is kind of an interesting concept because I don't know if it was spiritual or not, but I remember getting off of my bed, going to the place where I had my drugs and my needle. We had a little, you could get drugs in prison. And walking over to the toilet and putting it in the toilet and flushing it down the toilet.
Hmm.
Life changed at that moment. I remember coming out of my cell the next morning. I said, I got it made. You know, the world is different for me.
Hmm.
So,
what happened?
I don't know. You know, Norman Vincent Peale talks about, controlling your life. And the quotes I remember were, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God is within you,
mm-hmm.
which was really this deal like, okay, all of that stuff that's out there is okay, but I got all this right in here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to look for anywhere else. And that this perception that God put that inside of everybody,
mm-hmm.
you just had to find it.
Right.
And so I just traveled inside and found that and said, okay,
there it is.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And then if God be for you, who could be against you?
Mm-hmm.
Then it was not only that I have this sort of feeling of I had the place to hide if I needed to hide, but I had all this power.
Mm.
And then the next piece was the How to Win Friends and Influence People she sent me.
Mm-hmm.
And then use the power to, through that book, in a very positive way. Then it got funny because I would say good morning to people and smile, and they'd say good morning and smile back. I said, that's interesting. You know, and these were guards in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was sort of a reality that said life can be different than it has been.
Yeah. You know, George, we have said this, we have observed this many, many times, that it seems like there are many people in addiction that have lost the ability to thrive.
Well, it takes your life away.
It does.
And it takes your motivation. I think what it really takes away is hope. And it sounds to me what he got was some hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from the Holy Spirit, that if God is for you, who can be against you? And I can change this with God's help because he can indwell me. I love that.
Yeah, I do too. But I do see how fascinating it is that he found through personal strength and what he discovered, God had put inside of him a chance to go out and start sharing his hope the next day. Walking out of the cell.
Am I dying, or do you hear that music, too?
I hear it.
Okay,
got 11 more seconds. All right, thanks.
Good. I thought the angels were coming.
Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back with more Real Recovery in just a minute. Hello, and welcome back. Bill Arnold here, George P. Fraser. And a special guest appearance by Rebecca Maxwell on the board tonight, doing an awesome job in studio with Dr. Les Green, and started off as a kid that got involved with drugs and alcohol and a little bit of crime on the side when he was a kid. And all of a sudden, he is has done some hard time and came to the realization that God's installed some pretty wonderful things that he could access. And he said, I'm going to do it. And he has this ability to thrive. And he goes out and shows the world that he's going to change.
Well, one of the things we talked about in the step at the beginning, Billy, was carrying the message to others. And his whole life changed because somebody sent him some books and he read them. And so if you're trying to encourage somebody and you don't see results all the time, our job is to reach out. The results are God's department. And so I really want to encourage you to keep doing that, because I was listening to that and I'm thinking, if this person hadn't have done that, we might not be here tonight. So that's a big deal.
It is. And Les, your path ended up having quite a bit of influence in the correctional institution. You have been on parole boards,
yes.
And you went back to the very place that you were incarcerated in quite a different position, didn't you?
Right. Yeah, actually, I had graduated from college in 1972, was off parole at that moment, got a discharge, and then in 1974 was appointed to the parole board by Wendy Anderson. It was Minnesota's first full-time parole board, so it was a full-time job. And so I was appointed to the parole board and walked back into the reformatory 4 years after I'd left as a vice chairman of the Minnesota Parole Board.
That's a hard one to believe.
Yeah, and the
That's
people
cool.
And all the people were still there, you know. And it was very interesting because most of the people I had served time with were still in prison.
Wow.
And would come into the boardroom, and people were asking whether or not I had to, recuse myself from people I knew. I said, I don't have a job if I have to do that because I know all these guys. Just
right.
About. and part of that whole point of that was simply not to, I mean the. It wasn't an issue because I didn't know whether people were fooling you or not. It just was, I was helping board members sort of try to make inmates feel good when they came in the room, and for the most part. So.
George, I don't see any, feeling sorry for myself, blaming, feeling like a victim. Les, you didn't have any of that, did you?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Oh, you
absolutely,
did.
Yeah.
I knew you were mad at other people,
yeah,
but
well,
did you feel like a victim?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had that whole issue of
you
being
played
that
card.
Oh, absolutely, the victim. And that's when but it's at some point the issue of, with the Norman Vincent Peale concept said, you're gonna have to break free of that. And so once giving that up, it was kind of interesting to be in control of your life. And part of that is, I mean, I had kind of a different relationship with God because he was my buddy. So it wasn't, I mean, I would pray like, look here, dude, we got to talk about this, you know. And so those are the kinds of ways I would talk to God.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes my family would get a little strange when they'd ask me to do the prayer at Thanksgiving or something.
Yeah.
Because I'd say, okay, look here, dude, we're getting ready to sit down and have some food, you know, and we're very happy about that. And, you know, I mean, it would be that kind of relationship. Because that's the relationship I needed. It was a partner, somebody to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And it works quite well like that. God will kind of do what you need him to do and come to you any way you need him to come to you, as long as you're willing to sort of accept him and say, okay, let's do this thing together.
He will meet all of your needs according to his glorious riches.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. Sometimes he meets the ones you don't want because you don't, you know, some of the challenges get crazy, but they're, yeah, you just sort of keep moving in the right direction.
Okay, so you also had an opportunity to be appointed to a national parole board, and that came through President Jimmy Carter. Is that right?
Yes, I was nominated to the United States Parole Commission by Jimmy Carter in 1980. Again, would have been the first ex-offender ever to be on the United States Parole Commission. There was some concerns by a number of senators that was... you know, and the reality was they were right. There had to be at least 10,000 people in the United States who were as qualified or more qualified than me that had not been in prison.
Oh.
And so putting an ex-offender on the board seemed more like a political issue. And so I didn't fault them for that, saying they didn't want that. But, and it probably was best. I actually did not get the appointment because I couldn't get it required Senate confirmation, and you've seen those, I think. And
I have.
They get
seen
a
those.
Bit dicey. So, but I had some conversations with senators about that, and I think it was very clear that had I got in the room, I would have been appointed. I would have been confirmed.
That's kind of an amazing opportunity that didn't work out, but still to be considered is very cool. I'm curious about what has gone on in the correctional institutions, and what have you seen over the last 20 or 30 years in terms of who was there with you when you were there, and then the kind of individual that is going through the institutions in the last 15 years?
You know, I actually have not. Let me back up and make sure the time sequence is clear. I actually got out of corrections in 1986.
Okay.
Went back to school at St. Cloud State, got a master's degree,
mm-hmm.
and then taught at the university for 20 years. Received a doctorate in 2006. So I actually was not in the institution or involved in anything
okay.
like that for
okay.
a long period of
okay.
time. What was happening at the time that I got out of it was the determinate sentencing came in. So we went from an indeterminate sentencing system to a determinate sentencing guidelines, actually, which is a more mathematical computation of how much time you're going to spend in
mm-hmm.
prison. But I think one of the things you'll find about Minnesota prisons is that they still function on a concept of rehabilitation as opposed to just simply doing time. And so there's still a lot of programmatic things going on in our institutions that may not be in others, but a lot of programmatic things that are helping people who want to help themselves. And so that the inmates might be the same. What's really a problem for most inmates now is check the box concept. When you get out of prison, you try to find a job and you have to check the box whether you've had a felony
mm-hmm.
or not.
Mm-hmm.
That limits a lot of activity for you. I could not have been a parole agent. I mean, I couldn't be a parole agent now.
Not today.
No, I could be on the parole board, but I couldn't be a parole agent.
Right.
Because of the felony conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting concept about some people who would be the best ability to help other people who have had addiction problems can't become counselors because of that prior issue with the drug. And they're in the best position to say, you know, I was in the swamp and I figured out how to get out of the swamp. And then I went back in the swamp to help other people get out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't been there, it's difficult to tell people how to get out of it. You know, and it's kind of like I always liken it to the Valley of the Shadow of Death, that when you decide to leave the valley, things get real crazy for you.
Mm.
And the closer you get to getting out of it, the worse it gets.
Mm.
And there's a moment when you're right on the edge of that valley when you have to take the leap of faith because, everybody's trying to pull you back. Everything is pulling you back. It's not going to work. Nobody is going to care about you. And it's at that moment that you're going to have the leap of faith, and that's when you need to fall into the arms of the big guy
mm-hmm. yeah.
who says, I can help you through this.
I will never leave you or forsake you.
Yeah.
Yeah. George, it does seem that when you are trying to extract yourself from chaos, that it is going to put up a fight, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Satan doesn't want you to succeed, and there are some societal things that happen. I'm a licensed counselor, so I know what he's talking about. The Board of Behavioral Health can hold up a license, and I think what happens a lot is you can get an override, but they want to see how you're going to do for a while. And, you know, there are consequences to what we do, but it's not a perfect system. And I agree with you that, you know, it's like you go to a golf pro, the guy's got to be able to play. And you don't learn this stuff in school. You don't read it out of a book. You got to live it. I mean, I'm an addict. I can play you all day long. I can read you if you're not, and I'll play you. And that's kind of the way it is. And for somebody who's done some time, they know it. They can read you. They can feel it, right? So you want to have somebody telling you, here's how you do it, because I did it. That always carries more weight. And it goes into step 12 that God allows us that gift. So I'm all for if we need to change some rules or, you know, have a reviewal process that gets people there, because really I think what we wind up doing is impeding God's progress, because God wants people to do this.
Right.
That's fair, isn't it?
Go ahead.
But one of the things you have to be really careful about is making sure that people put the track record down, you know, because it's a long, long process. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many times when your brain says, this is not worth it. And without some kind of help, you can fall backwards. And the problem is and I think that's one of the reasons you'll find the laws are strict, is that if you fall back, you take other people with you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you're working with vulnerable adults, and so it's a tricky deal. But there's always better solutions, aren't there?
Yeah.
So
it's the whole idea, though, of of taking people down with you. We hear that story over and over and over, because you're not doing this by yourself. You're mm-hmm. taking people with you.
Yep. No man's an island. We
yes.
have, you know, we have families. We have people. When it happens at work, it can be a disaster. But I really think the point is, for people that are trying to change their life, I think for a lot of guys I've worked with, Doctor, is that the hope that they can help others seems to change everything for a right. lot of guys. There's a purpose in what I right. did, right?
Right. You'll find that I'm trying to write a book, and I have pages and pages and pages, but I know what the title is. If you really want to make a difference, it's important to know what difference to make. And once you've been there, you do know what difference to make. And it's the difference of saying, how can I grab what's inside of me, develop the power from what's inside to carry me through? Because if it comes from outside and all of a sudden it's not there for me, or mm-hmm. somebody doesn't show up, then I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You got to put it inside and get people to the point where they can pull this out of themselves, because it's in there.
Yeah. So when you have a strength inside that circumstances can't alter, that's when you're going to be able to move out in strength.
Yeah, I think it has to come from God, and I think the desire to change comes from God. I think we can pull that back, and so that leap of faith, you got to be all in on this mm-hmm. deal. And what happens is we're conditional, and if it's not working or we don't think it's going to work, then we just say, I'm not doing it. And so the people that succeed, for some reason, they get through the tough time, and there are going to be tough times. And so if you're listening out there and you hit the wall and you messed up, here's the deal. You didn't wreck it.
Mm.
Ask for forgiveness. Get back up. Call somebody. Get some help. Pray to God. What can I do to change this? Because the enemy's going to tell you, no, now you did it. You never could do it, and it's not going to work. Then you're done. And you are going to stub your toe.
Yeah, the enemy's always got a solution for you.
Yes.
You have to understand that. It's not the right solution, but the enemy's got a solution for you at the liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's always that. But God's got a different solution. Get up, dust yourself off, and let's take another run at this.
Mm. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Dr. Les Green. Thanks for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. So glad you're listening. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to the big show. 47 minutes after the hour on this beautiful Sunday night. There's the morning guy in me coming through.
Yep, it's 5:47, big guy.
Well, not in Hartford, it's not, George.
I don't care. I'm in Minneapolis. It's all about us, Bill. We're here. In Hartford, it's probably an hour later, huh?
It's exactly an hour later. But we want to just thank our Hartford people for listening, because we love you at 94.1 FM in Hartford. How about that, George?
What number is it?
94.1 FM.
Okay.
Yeah. So, George, one of the things I'm hearing loud and clear tonight is when you have a plan and God sort of helps guide you going forward, you can do some cool things.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot about, you know, you can either have faith or fear. And the voice that comes in and says, give up, don't do this, that's never from God. And you see results. These are outstanding results. But with God, all things are possible.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from him, you can do nothing. So this is encouraging to me to see it and to hear it. It is for other people, and I keep getting back to the books that were sent. If you're working with somebody, if you're praying for somebody, and it's not working, you know, we have the tendency to go, well, I'm not going to pray for them anymore. Keep doing it. Our job is to keep praying.
Keep in front of the person.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much they have disappointed you, right?
Right. You know, it's interesting. You've heard the story or the saying that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality for me is that when the student is ready, they'll remember everything that you said to them.
Mm.
And so you have to keep the message consistent with kids, with people who are addicted, that the message is always the same, because when they're ready, they'll remember it all.
Interesting. So it's all logging into their brain.
Right.
And the minute the student is ready, it all comes into focus.
Yeah. And that first time you figure out that you've got the power inside to manage this, and you know where it comes from,
mm-hmm.
and it's always been in there, and you just need to tap into it. After that, it's, okay, I'm the big guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the big guy in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can get out of this. God's help.
Through it.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Well, George, I find stories of transformation always so inspiring, and also the path that Les has been on, really from a kid to now a retired PhD, and now he's doing some substitute teaching. He's not retired.
That's not happening.
No, he's going to try to write a book and then substitute teach. And how would you like, you know, a 6'7" retired PhD substitute teaching you?
Hope your book's coming along better than ours is. No, and you know, the good thing, Bill, we hear these stories, but when a guy goes out and speaks, you see the story. And I think that's a big difference because, you know, if you're in the audience and you're in school, you see it and you know the guy because he's there. That has a big impact. So I appreciate you doing that. I think it's just a huge deal to get out. And for kids to go, there's a lot of guys who think they're cool because they're doing what you did early. And to have somebody go, no, you're on the wrong track, that's going to hit somebody.
Mm-hmm. I really want to encourage listeners out there who have participated in the life of an addict that they love. I think of Uncle Max and Auntie Rethi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they continue to feed into your life, and you were in prison at the time.
Right.
And they just kept loving you.
Right.
And kept loving you and kept loving you.
Yeah, I remember the when she had to get permission to write to me,
mm-hmm.
and on the form she said it's asking her how long she had known me, and she said from the moment he opened his eyes, you know, and just a very very interesting woman who could, by the way, she was a Sunday school teacher and she could tell a story and you thought you were watching a movie.
Wow,
she was that animated to that. So.
She could paint pictures in your mind, huh?
Right, right.
That's the essence of
it. But one of the things that's also important is that you marry the right person, right? and they take care of you also. Because there have been many times at home when things weren't going well for me. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there was never, well, that's all right, honey, things will get better. It was, well, you still got to go to work. You still have to do these things. We still have to live. We still have to do it. So,
mm-hmm.
so we'll both make it through it. So, and then her parents, a wonderful set of in-laws, you know, had the best mother-in-law in the world
mm-hmm.
ever. And so there's a lot of things that come into your life because of what you're doing and who you are and how
mm-hmm.
you operate. And those things help. And as long as you keep operating that way, then the people who are there don't change.
Yeah.
They still need you and you still need them.
Because isolation, and when you get away from your community, that's when the trouble just gets worse and worse, and recoveries from addiction of any kind is even harder.
Well, there's humility I'm hearing here, too. Not only is he not taking credit for a lot of things, he's sharing the community, but the willingness on his part to listen to people. He's coachable. He's a teacher. But he doesn't just spend his time behind the mic telling others what to do. He actually does it himself. And that's where you get the fruit, and you got to stay that way. And if you're listening to other people, you're on the right track. Where we get into trouble is when we go, I got this. And you start thinking in your head of why you don't need to listen to people. You start ruling them out. And what I'm hearing is I listen to everybody, and I choose, you know, with God's help, what applies.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah, you had a lot of people speaking good words into your life and loving
yeah.
you despite all kinds of circumstances. And that's inspiring for me because, George and I work with a lot of men in recovery, and I sometimes think there are a lot of people, they've chased away everyone in their life that ever loved them.
Right.
And they're feeling isolated.
And I think one of the things they have to remember is they haven't chased them away. They put a little distance. And at some point, you have to believe that people who loved you once will still love you, but you just have to change. They just can't be around you. They
mm-hmm.
just need you to be a different person. And once you make that change, I think it works. I'm not the easiest person to live with, by the way.
He just turned his head towards his wife of 47 years.
Yeah.
And she's got a big smile on her face.
Right,
so she knows something to be true, doesn't she, Les?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And there's the nervous laughter I was looking forward to.
Right. So it's good. But life's been good for me. And I know where it all started. I
mm-hmm.
remember that getting up off that bed in that cell
mm-hmm.
and then taking control of my life.
Mm-hmm.
When I say I took control, it was because the control was inside.
Right.
And I really believed that. And it was like, this is easy stuff as long as you hang on to the anchor point that's inside.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'll always move in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, at some point to grab that, even when you stumble and fall, again, it's get up and run right back at it.
Yeah. It's not, you can do it, can't you?
Yeah. If it was easy, everybody would do it. It's not going to be easy. Mm-hmm. Not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be worth it.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah. If it's easy, you would have done it already.
Yeah. Right? Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
But it is doable with God's help and persistence. Just keep getting up. Keep doing it one day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you got to do.
And I love what Les said tonight about the enemy does have an answer as well. Yeah. It's just the wrong answer.
Yeah. It's nice that you guys do this, you know. This is I didn't know what the show was actually about, but this is good for people. You know, they have some place they can tune
we're
in.
Here for it's good for us.
We're here for the big money.
Yeah,
us.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a connection where and it's not a commercial connection. It's a been there, done that, and I imagine you have been able to. The people can call you and talk to you if they need to.
Oh yeah,
as long as it doesn't take a lot of time or effort on our part, we're willing.
We're absolutely
right,
open.
Yeah,
right,
we're there
right,
for you.
Yeah,
right.
We're absolutely ready. And it is great to hear stories of transformation. I never get tired of that.
I don't either.
Nor do you.
It's such a blessing to be here. So thank you very much. That
thank
was
you.
Just great.
A delight.
And. His grandson is here, and, you know, it's got to be impressive to see the life of Grandpa, who paid attention in school. Right? Yes. He's giving me that look of shock. But
it's a great story of what God can do in your life if you let him.
Mm-hmm. And that
there's no limit, you know?
Nope. And God will give you incredible strength, and he will... give you the power to change and then the way to live that out. And as long as you hang on, you'll be fine.
Yep. I don't know the new hand signals in here. What
oh,
doing?
It's just like if you had another comment to throw on top
oh,
of that.
Oh, I thought I was getting the peace sign. Or
no, what? This is the peace sign right
okay.
there. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I think, Billy, if we get to where we're going to give up, that's from us. That's from the enemy. I want to get on my knees and say, God, what do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then call somebody that's, a godly person in your life. Because you're right. Satan always has an answer.
Or start taking the calls of people who are calling you. Just pick up the phone when they call. Because maybe some people right now are trying to reach out to you, but you're... avoiding them because you want to do things your way.
Absolutely.
So maybe it's just time you answer the phone or you call someone back that left a message on your voicemail.
Yeah, like I did to you today. So maybe I'll look forward to that on the way home.
I haven't checked my phone.
You've been busy today.
I haven't checked my phone, but I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good
so,
show. Thank you.
Yeah. We always are glad to hear from listeners, and we had a really lovely letter from a listener in Australia this week, George. Have you saw that?
I saw that.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice to know that we're giving people encouragement around the globe.
Well, we're kind of big time now, so.
Really?
Yeah, we 5 years, we're into year six.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have given us a couple weeks, remember, when we came in, and God's been great, and it's been fun, and, you know, this story tonight, it helps me. We got the best jobs in the world,
man. I agree. That wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. So glad you listened tonight. Thank you so much. If you'd like to pass this along, you can go to myfaithradio.com, go to the Real Recovery webpage, and there it is. It's all there. You can just send it on to your friends. Thanks very much for listening. Have a great night, and God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.